Beth Potter didn't even own a bike 7 years ago. Now she's a world triathlon champion and heading to the Olympics. Beth represented Team GB in the 10,000 metres at Rio in 2016 before making the switch a year later. Last year, she won the world title, securing her spot in Paris.
We were hoping for tears of happiness, but unfortunately it was the other tears. I don't even know where some of these parts are on a bike. You know, I was very, very confused. Realistically, we could have multiple medals at this Olympics. Just everything I did, I would get beaten at.
Paris looming large, and then thinking that 36 hours out, you might not have slept.
How do I change these second and third places into winning? Like, how do I do that? Yeah, it was just a complete step into the unknown and something that was really quite scary.
Beth, let's start with this concept of the fact that there you are, as somebody who's never owned a bike before, who somehow manages to then win a world title at triathlon. How on earth does that even happen?
Oh, it's been such a long journey and quite a hard one as well along the way, but it's really rewarding at the same time. And yeah, to think back after the Rio Olympics, I hadn't even, you know, really committed to triathlon at the time, and I moved to Leeds and, you know, left my whole life in London. And, you know, I had to buy some new equipment as well. And then, yeah, 7 years later to take home the world title, you know, it's just crazy.
It's kind of the stuff that dreams are made of if you're a very, very patient person, which I guess you are. And we'll talk about that in some detail in a moment. But can I just take you back to Rio, although you might be kicking and screaming on your way back there to discuss it. But and the story of what happened there and what unfolded, which eventually effectively led to this switch in sports from athletics to triathlon. What happened at Rio 2016 for people that don't know that led eventually to you becoming a world champion triathlete?
So yeah, going into the Rio Olympics, I was working full-time as a physics teacher in London, and my preparation had gone really well, and it was just one of those things, just yeah, luck or unlucky on the day where I went to bed with a vomiting bug. And yeah, just I was not able to perform at my best the next day, and I really struggled with that off the back of Rio. And you know, I wasn't going there to medal, and I was probably aiming for a top 12, which would have been really, really good. But yeah, just to have the disappointment of not performing on a global stage, and then yeah, just feeling really lost and confused, and didn't really know what I wanted to do, and didn't feel satisfied. So yeah, I just decided to completely change my life around and do something completely different out of my comfort zone, and yeah, just see where I could get to with another sport.
Normally we associate athletes with having this incredible mindset and this sort of power to overcome all adversity. I mean, when you're faced with a situation which is effectively out of your control, you've done the training, you've put all the prep in, and then you get this hideous vomiting bug that ends your chances of doing what you want to do on the Olympic stage. I mean, what does that do? How do you sort of overcome that and reset? Because that must have been an immense disappointment at the, you know, it must have been very, very difficult to cope with.
It was really difficult, yeah. And I think actually my parents struggled more than me. And my mum is still traumatised by the whole experience in Rio. You know, they came out to support me and be there. And hopefully, you know, we were hoping for tears of happiness, but unfortunately it was the other tears. And I think I'm a very resilient person. You know, I'm really tough, and I'm not very good at quitting things, but I just knew that the time was right to walk away, and I just needed something completely fresh, something different, something that I could be, you know, a beginner at again and see improvement. And at the end of the day, I really want a global medal, and I've got one now, but I still want an Olympic medal, and that's my goal for this summer.
So that's really interesting, isn't it? That's a little mindset insight from you, that actually it's all about, like, I want to win this medal. I've got what it takes. I know I've got what it takes to win this medal. If I'm not going to get it in that, I'm going to get it in this. I mean, is it as simple as that? Because I think we can all overcomplicate a thing, but is it as simple as saying, that's what I'm after, and I've got to find a way to get there?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I think for as long as I can remember, maybe the 2004 Olympic Games, watching Kelly Holmes, you know, that was what kind of sparked it for me. You know, like, I was, you know, glued to the television watching those Olympic Games. And that's probably what got me into athletics properly. So, yeah, to not be good enough. I just wasn't good enough on the track, to be honest with you. Like, I competed against the Africans and they were just too good. They were better than me. But, yeah, I think I've got what it takes to do it in triathlon. And I'm putting everything into it so that I can have a completely different experience this summer at the Olympic Games.
So what was it like going to buy your first bike effectively at a later age to most that would have been competing on that triathlon stage? I mean, there's one thing to be able to run really well, but you've also got to compete in the swimming event and also you've got to compete at the cycling part. So how did you sort of divide and conquer your time and apply yourself to make sure you were as competitive as you needed to be for the full picture?
I was very clueless about, you know, even what the numbers meant, you know, and now I know what it means, but when I see things like 51, 52, I don't know what that meant. Everything was confusing. And then the group set, the numbers of the group set and the handlebar width, I was like, I don't even know where some of these parts are in a bike. You know, I was very, very confused. But I had a friend that was linked to Specialized at the time. And she put me in touch with someone at the Specialized factory down south in near London, just outside of London. And I got a bike at cost price and I was very excited and you know, just kind of looked at it until after Christmas. And then when I moved to Leeds on the, I think it was the 7th or 8th of January in 2017, that was it. That was my introduction to road bike riding and being clipped into a bike. So it was all very, very novel and very new, and I definitely had to, you know, learn very quickly and learn how to, you know, change a tire and just everything. It was just a lot of information in one go. But I had a lot of very experienced people around me, and you know, like, they were always willing to help, so that did help. But it was just a complete step into the unknown and something that was really quite scary.
And are you just one of those people who's just up for the challenge? I mean, you're sort of walking into a completely different sport from the world in which you knew, which was athletics. Is the challenge of the thing something that really excites you?
I'm not sure if it was. I don't know if I would describe it as exciting in that first year. Like, it was new and it was something different. But I spent a lot of time, you know, upset and, you know, like, down and, you know, doubting myself whether I made the right decision. And it was really hard. Like, I hadn't swum for 8 years, and other than on and off when I'd been injured on the track, so I'd go and do some cross training, but you know, I hadn't been in a squad environment in the pool for ages. I'd never done any proper cycling training, and then to top it all off, I was going to the track and training with boys because I was too quick for the girls that were, you know, there still. So I was just, everything I did I would get beaten at. You know, so I would get dropped on the bike. I couldn't keep up in the swim because I hadn't used those muscles in years. And then I'm training with people much, much better than me on the track, and I would just be far behind and also tired from all this new training. So just, yeah, everything about it. And I did start writing a diary of it, like, just personally, just so I could look back and remember how hard it was. But I think I very quickly gave up on that because it was just, everything was just so hard. I was tired and I was hungry all the time, and it was just tough. And I remember I was actually living with Johnny Brownlee at the time, and I just can't understand how he was doing all this training. I was like, how are you going out again?
So what does that for a regular person, what does that look like, the amount of training? Like, what does a typical day for a triathlete look like who's training, like you say, to this capacity?
Let's take tomorrow, for example. We've got a 90-minute swim in the morning, which will be longer sort of aerobic reps. So anything up to like 10 minutes per rep, but just easy and kind of technique. And then we'll come back, have some breakfast, and then we'll head out on the bike for 3.5 to 4 hours. Just again, a long aerobic steady ride in the Yorkshire Dales. Probably have a lunch stop somewhere out in the Dales, and ride back home. And then a little sit down, some more food, and then an easy half an hour run. So that's just a typical day. And that's just an easy, long aerobic day. So, you know, it's not even including any hard sessions. So it's a lot of training, and it's a full-time job for sure.
Did you ever just think, what the hell am I doing? Because I know it's been a real slog for you to make that transition from 2016 to winning the world title last year. It's been a lot of years in the middle where it's been a real, real slog, as you've just described. Did you ever just think, oh my God, this is too much. I need to think again.
Yeah, I think there was definitely moments where I thought, like, how am I going to bridge this gap? Like, how am I going to get better? But I have seen such big improvements over every single winter that I've done. And I think that's what's kept it alive for me. And seeing those improvements and being able to improve week on week, month on month, it's nice and it's rewarding. And it's, you know, it's progress there that you can see. So I think I always knew that I could be quite good at it, and with it finishing with a run, you know, I just had to get to that stage and be, you know, be fresh enough to use that superpower sort of thing. But yeah, it's taken time, and that's definitely something that I wasn't good at when I moved to Leeds. You know, I wanted it all now, and I wanted it right here, right now. That's what I wanted. And I had to kind of learn to accept, just to let go and just, you know, do the process, enjoy the journey, and the results will come. And I think definitely over the last couple of years, I've learned to do that. And yeah, the results have come.
How do you do that? Because there's plenty of people out there listening, watching, that sort of think, oh God, like you've said, you know, why can't I achieve what I want to achieve right now in this very moment? And it does take much longer than that sometimes to get to where they want to get to. I mean, how could you get to sort of, can you train yourself to be more patient?
I think the biggest thing for me is just being consistent and, you know, turning up day in, day out, and just doing the training. You know, not every day is amazing. You know, today, for example, I didn't have a great swim in the pool, but I was tired because of the weeks of accumulation that I've already got, but I'm not stressed about it. You know, I've got the work is done. And I think it's just about being consistent and taking the sessions off. And if you're consistent in training, that will start to kind of shine through in your racing as well. And I think, yeah, just setting realistic goals every year. So not trying to set the world alight, but, you know, aiming for just setting your own realistic goals from year to year. And I didn't actually have win the world championships on my goal list last year. My goals for last year were to qualify for the Olympics, and to win the world championships on top of that was a very nice surprise. So yeah, I think it's about just being realistic and being consistent in your training.
And having goal setting. I mean, you say that you didn't mean necessarily to win the world title last year, but how important is goal setting for an athlete, especially when you're looking at sort of, you know, various timestamps ahead that you've got to hit, like for instance, the Olympics?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, our British triathlon's policy for qualifying for the Games is the toughest in the world to qualify for. You know, there's two races, the Paris Test event and the grand final in Pontevedra last year, that I had to finish on the podium. And that's a big ask anyway, because with a triathlon, what I've learned is there's so many things that can go wrong. It's not like a track race where you can control, you know, what time you're going to run, or, you know, it's not like that. There's so many things that are out of your control, like whether, you know, someone cuts you up on the bike, or if you have a bad swim because of, you know, like other bodies around you. You know, there's a lot of it that's kind of out of your control. And I think being able to perform in those 2 days was really key for me. And then actually winning them both was, you know, I had to really focus on what my goals were for that those competitions. And Alistair Brownlee said to me, he was a bit of kind of helping me as well, and he said to me, you need to go there and you need to go win. And I, at the time, this was the year before, I was like, that's a really big ask. Like, that's 2 days that I have to be on form. Like, that's a big ask. That's a really big ask. And I never thought I'd do that. And I did it. You know, I thought a podium at both was possible, but I didn't think I was going to win both. So, yeah, I've learned to kind of believe in myself a little bit more off the back of last season.
So what do you think the difference was, Beth? What was the difference between you thinking, okay, I want to podium, and actually winning? Is there something that you can pinpoint as the difference in both of those cases?
I did start working with a psychologist on this, because I found that the year before, I was, you know, consistently finishing second or third on the kind of world stage. And I said, like, how do I change these second and third places into winning? Like, how do I do that? How do I win a race now? And yeah, I think it's, yeah, you know, they said that my kind of physical ability was up there, but my, you know, mental ability was probably maybe a 7 out of 10. So I've really had to work on, you know, I think staying calm under pressure. That's been a big thing for me. And also just when it gets to crunch point, just backing myself and believing that I can do it. And just, it's just about who wants to hurt the most. And I can do that in training. So I can hurt the most in training. So why can't I do it in a race? And I think that's something that I've really had to work at this year. And it's happened.
So that's interesting, isn't it? What was stopping you before, do you think, from sort of taking what you knew you could do on the training field or pool or whatever it might have been and actually converting that into a race day performance?
I'm not sure. I think it's been partly a bit of both. Like every year I've got a little bit stronger. So that's obviously going to help. So by the time I get to the run, I've got more in the bag. But then also I think, you know, being in those situations where I'm in the front pack and I'm feeling good. Yeah, I think I have this kind of internal dialogue that I go through, and I'm speaking to myself, and anyone that kind of is in my head would think I'm crazy. But yeah, it's just about constant reinforcement that I can do this. There's evidence that I can do this, and being positive, and I just enjoy it. I love that kind of bit in the race where it's nerve-wracking and you're like, how long is this going to be? How long is this going to be for? When should I go? When should I break them? And I find that enjoyable. I know people at home probably don't find it enjoyable when I leave it quite last minute, but you know, I'm in control, and I feel like, yeah, it's something I've definitely had to work at, and I don't know if I would have got there without the help.
That's really interesting. I want to imagine what a race is like for you then. So can you take me through it? Because I want to know, like, when these internal voices have to necessarily kick in. Do they kick in all three aspects of the competition, or are they there in one particular part, or do you have to sort of dial them up and dial them down? I mean, I'm just sort of thinking about how you sort of preserve your energy, your concentration, your focus throughout the course of a triathlon. How does that kind of break down? I'm really interested to know.
So what I tend to do now is I kind of take the race and break it down into five different sections. So let's take an Olympic distance triathlon, for example. So you have the swim, you have transition one, you have the bike, you have transition two, and then you have the run. And what I do is I just write it on my iPhone notes, and I go through and I, you know, can I go through the key points in each part of the discipline where I need to be really focused and really switched on, and other parts as well that kind of bring anxiety around. So for example, in the swim, when we're standing on the pontoon, the heartbeat music makes me feel anxious. So I try and turn that around, and I write it down and I say, heartbeat music playing, turn this nervous energy into excitement, looking forward to getting the season underway. So things like that. And then key parts in that swim would be being really switched on around a buoy, because you need to own your space, you need to make sure that you have clear water, and if you are getting, you know, some all over, just stay calm and just be present about keep moving forward. So it's just having it written down. I feel like it goes from my head, all these thoughts in my head, it's on paper. I've got a plan A, I've got a plan B, and I've got a plan C if something goes wrong. And yeah, I just basically go through the key points in the race, and there's usually like 5 or 6 points in each kind of section of the race. And I just think having that, you know, written down and something there that I can look at before I go out onto the pontoon, it's there. I know what I'm doing. I'm calm. I feel ready for this. And it's also a really useful tool to come back at the end of a race and be like, right, did I tick off my tick list? And if not, right, where can I improve? So it's a constant sort of a character test. You're going back and you're thinking, how did I cope with this? How did I cope with that? And it has really taught me to stay calm when things get really, when there's a lot of pressure. And it's taught me to just stay calm and make good decisions.
And does this come from the school of your sports psychologist who sort of said to you, right, these are the areas we've identified that you need to to tackle or to improve, and this is the best way forward? I mean, or have you worked closely with them on working out what needs to be amped up in order to get the best out of your performance? How have you sort of figured out where the touch points are?
I think what I was finding in races was that I would finish and I couldn't remember key points of it because I just wasn't present. And now I could pick any race last season. I could tell you what happened at a particular point. I could tell you I was six at the first boy. I could tell you who was around me. I know these things. I know, you know, who was beside me. I know whose feet I was swimming on. Like, and before, I just felt like I was in a washing machine. I just didn't know where I was. I didn't remember key parts of the race. And now I feel like, yeah, I can go back and I can tell you exactly what happened in most of these races. But I think it has been, I don't think it's necessarily all the psychology. I think that has been a huge part for me. And just generally feeling more positive in myself and my ability. But I think a lot of it also has come from the training that I'm doing as well. You know, I'm 6-7 years into this type of training now, and you know, I don't find it as tiring, not as taxing on my body. But yeah, I think definitely the two come hand in hand for me.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you've gone from a sport which was the 10,000 meters to something that you've sort of given yourself a triple threat problem. So you sort of amped up in that area where you've got so much more, I would imagine, to have to think about and have to consider and have to overcome. And yet previously you sort of talk about actually the stress and managing those anxiety, nerves and everything else getting in the way. So it's kind of an interesting one that you've chosen this sport, which could make that even more compounded, if you like. But I guess the challenge of it is to overcome that, and in dealing with it the way you have, you've managed to find a way.
Yeah, I think I've always been a very anxious person. I've always worried about everything ever since I was a child. I think I get it from my mum. I find now that, you know, I have this expectation to go into races and to do well and to be on the podium and to win. And I put a lot of pressure on myself to do that. You know, like I don't feel it from other people. Like it's all on me. You know, it's I want to do well. I've done all the training for these events. I want to do well. And I know what I'd be, I know what I'm happy with. I know what I'd be disappointed with. So I think, yeah, even though I don't get, you know, the anxiety like that in the race anymore, I get it before the race now. You know, I get it the night before, the 2 days before, where I don't sleep. You know, so that's my most recent trait. I don't get any sleep the night before a race. So
so how do you manage that? How do you overcome that? Because to not get sleep before a highly competitive event, with the multi-disciplines that you've got to perform in those areas for to achieve success, how do you get through it?
Well, it's always good to bank the sleep when I'm at home before I go away. So I try and, you know, I do get a good 9.5 hours every night. So I'm banking sleep there in the weeks leading into the race. And Paris test event last year, for example, I went to bed on the Monday night, woke up Tuesday morning, and I didn't race till Thursday morning. But after I woke up on the Tuesday morning, I didn't sleep again until Thursday night. So I had no sleep going into that. I know. And, you know, it's not like I didn't try everything. I tried everything. I tried chamomile tea, I tried yoga, I tried reading a book, podcasts, everything. And I think one bit of advice I've had that's really helped is that you don't need the sleep. You're rested. You're well rested. You've tapered. You've had loads of sleep last week. You're well rested. All you need to do is race. And that really got me through, to be honest. That was a text that I received in the middle of the night. I'm well rested. I've got energy. I'm fine. I'm running off adrenaline now. And I did, and I performed really, really well. And I've done this a couple of times now, and yeah, I know it works. So I think it's been really kind of good to trial and test that this year, because I can guarantee you I'm not going to get any more sleep this year, this summer at the games. So
does that become like a pattern of behavior, effectively? Kind of, it's happened a couple of times. We all know this in our different worlds, where, you know, if you're struck by that problem, at one particular moment, it can repeat on you several times, depending on the circumstances, because yeah. you relate the two things. I mean, is that not absolutely terrifying? The prospect of Paris looming large and then thinking that 36 hours out, you might not have slept.
I know. But I did it last year. I'll be fine. So it'll be okay. And I'm doing the exact same build up as I did last year. So it'll be fine. And last summer really did feel, the race felt different to another race that we do in the circuit. You know, there was a feel about it in Paris. Everyone was very nervous. And so I think, yeah, we've done that. And I'm glad that we've done that now. So we know what to expect this summer. But yeah.
I'll
be glad when the 31st of July is over.
Yeah, if I didn't know better, I'd have thought that text that came to you in the middle of the night came from Paula Radcliffe, because we interviewed her on this pod and she said, I often did not sleep before the next day, before a marathon. And I was like, how on earth did you function? She said, my dad used to always say to me, you've already slept loads this week, you'll be fine. Yeah. And I never believed in a sleep bank thing, but now clearly it is an issue amongst athletes.
Yeah, it's just... Yeah, it was weird. We recently were out in Abu Dhabi racing, well, meant to be racing on the first World Series of the year. And the first race of the season is always very, you know, you don't know where anyone's at. It's quite, you don't know how everyone's winter's gone. So it's always a good tester to see where we're at, and especially in Olympic year. And we all didn't realise that we were going to bed that night and the race had been cancelled by the UAE government. So we all went to bed. I had the usual minimal sleep. Next morning, up. Then we get announced that the race has been cancelled, and I felt the adrenaline drain from my body. I was like, wow. And I actually felt that evening as if I had raced. You know, I had all the kind of post-race things, like, you know, headache, feeling tired, and I hadn't even raced. All I'd done was go for a run. And it was just, yeah, it obviously, you know, that adrenaline can get you through.
So what are you putting in place ahead of Paris this year, because it's your first Olympics as a triathlete, to make sure that you manage, and I know you've spoken about this sports psychology piece before, but how you manage your nerves, how you manage your stress, how you manage your build up effectively to that event. Are you having to sort of make plans, where you must be, about how you're going to do that in the lead up?
I actually listened to a podcast with Jessica Ennis recently, and about how she coped with the pressures of 2012, and it's exactly how I was hoping to approach Paris this year. You know, I want to do all my prep at home in an environment that I'm familiar with. You know, I've got everything I need here. I've just moved into my newly renovated house. I'm really happy to be at home. I've got my dog, I've got my boyfriend here, and my training partners, and everything I need here. So trying to keep everything as normal as possible and treat it as if it's another race, because it is, it's the same girls I race week in, week out. There just happens to be a different medal at the end of it. So I'm going to try and keep things as normal as possible, because that's how I perform in my best. You know, I like familiarity, and I think that's my approach for this summer.
That makes plenty of sense. Is this the best Team G triathlon squad ever?
I mean, so far, we could say, yeah. We've got, well, do you mean the team that's been picked already?
Yeah, it feels like there's this massive strength and depth thing going on with you lot. And also it feels like everyone is talking up, and I know it's dangerous, chances ahead of Paris 2024. But it just feels, there's something, it feels like there's a lot being spoken about in terms of glowing references as to the squad of people that have been put together, and actually almost some dilemmas over choices that are going to have to be made nearer the day. So, I mean, what does that feel like, being part of that setup? It must be really exciting.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's in a really good place, especially on the women's side at the moment as well. We have about four women in the top six in the world, and it's, unfortunately, someone is going to be disappointed by not making the team. But, you know, we've all got different strengths, and you know, realistically we could have multiple medals at this Olympics. And even just looking at the kind of team really as well, we've got a really good chance of you know, backing up the gold that we won last time. So it's not going to be easy. We've got the French and we've got the Germans, but, you know, it's really exciting to be kind of part of that. And I think with Alex and I already on the team, yeah, it'll be good to see who kind of makes the rest of the team in the end of May. So yeah, all I can say is I'm just glad I'm picked, because it would be, I think, having missed the first race of the season and then feeling like I had to show form and get points, I think I would be quite nervous. But they've all got sights on Calgary, and I'm sure they're all prepped for their trials. So yeah, I wish them the best.
How, talking about sights, how distracted are you going to be by the Eiffel Tower, the Champs-Élysées, like so many different amazing things to see on your particular journey through the streets of Paris? Can you take me through the course? Because I know you've already raced it. So can you take me through what that looks like, what that feels like, how you're going to, how it's going to unfold over the course of that triathlon?
So we start on the Alexandre Pont 2, I think I'm saying it correctly, bridge, and we dive off into the Seine, and we swim with the water taking us. Yeah, we have a really, very strong current going with us down to the first buoy, so it's very fast. And then you do a kind of U-turn at that buoy and you come back upstream, and it's very, very slow. It feels, it's a lot, this current is strong. And then we come out and we do a smaller lap again on the second, and then we exit. We climb up the stairs and then we do 8 laps on a kind of circuit over the bridge, up the Champs-Élysées, and then onto the other side and past the Eiffel Tower. And then the run, I believe, is being amended at the moment. I'm not sure what the updated run course is, but last year, yeah, there's a very iconic video of Cassandre and I running up the Champs-Élysées with the Arc de Triomphe in the background, and it's just super cool. And running on the cobbles, it's just, yeah. Like you see, I've watched the Tour de France and seen the riders riding on that for years, and yeah, it was just amazing to be part of that and be on that course. And yeah, I'm very much looking forward to going back this summer. So yeah, it's a great course, and it is difficult not to be distracted by the amazing iconic buildings as you're going around.
I'm so excited for you. It's going to be brilliant. And okay, I've got to ask you, just before we sort of dive off this and allow you to get on with your 25-hour day of training, a performance tip. What you employ is obviously a different level of performance than most people would. But what would you suggest to people who are listening or watching this podcast about what they might want to do every day just to give themselves a little bit of a boost performance-wise? What would be the one thing that you do or that's been the best piece of advice you've been given around performance?
I think the best advice I've probably been given is just back yourself and believe in yourself, because that's definitely something I didn't do enough of. And yeah, just give yourself more credit. You're better than you think.
I'd be absolutely dreading it if I was going to be taking on the triathlon anytime soon. My bike skills are really very below par, let alone the swimming, let alone the rest of it, frankly. But I wish you all the very best, Beth. I'm so excited for you, and I really hope you come home with that gold medal. You really deserve it. Thank you so much for speaking to us.
Thank you for having me.